Welcome to our Day 5 preview from the 2018 U.S. Open. I'm Brian Clark with Ravi Ubba. A special welcome to tennis fans around the world listening in on Courtside. It's the official podcast of the U.S. Open. And Day 5 of the U.S. Open, well, really Night 5. Ravi, a little bit early to think of a Williams versus Williams showdown, but that's what we are getting in the third round. Serena against Venus for the 30th time in their pro careers under the lights in Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Well, what a fascinating matchup. It's going to be always a great matchup between two of the greats, two of the best players to ever play tennis. Serena has had the better of it, including last year at the Australian Open in the final, last Grand Slam title that Serena won. Although when they met this year in Indian Wells, when Serena was just in the infancy of her comeback, Venus was able to win that one. Venus has looked very good in the first couple of rounds, and I've kind of been thinking that In my head, I still think Serena is going to win. But based on what Venus has done and the wins over Svetlana Kuznetsova and Kamila Giorgi, maybe I'm maybe leaning the other way. Serena, though, has been serving great. And it's a fascinating contest because they're at a different stage of their careers. Obviously, Serena is a mom now. Venus has no plans to quit playing tennis. But how many more matchups are we going to get between these two at Grand Slams? You don't know. This could be the last one. Last time they actually met at a major besides the Australian Open was here at the U.S. Open 2015 in quarterfinals. And that was an excellent match. That was a thriller. Went to three sets. Athleticism on display from both players. So let's hope we get a repeat of that match we take in a second.
Let's see what the two players think about it, starting with the six-time U.S. Open champion Serena Williams.
It's obviously a tough match, and you know it's so young in the tournament, but it is what it is. You know, it's not the end of the world. We would rather have met later, but you know we're both going to come out per usual, do our best, play in front of you guys, and normally I would say cheer for me. But you know, whoever you're feeling like, you know, cheer for me or Venus, either one will work. So
that was Serena after her second round win, and pretty upbeat about the prospect of playing Venus. They don't make any secret they don't like playing each other in tournaments because they're sisters and best friends, and that's an uncomfortable situation. Let's hear what her big sister, the two-time U.S. Open champion Venus Williams, had to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's early in the tournament, so both of us are going to be looking forward to continue to play better. And obviously it's definitely a tough draw, and she's definitely fully capable of winning tonight's match. Hopefully I'll see you on Friday.
And indeed, Venus will see Serena on day five. That's Friday night, after Serena took care of business over her first two matches. But day five, not just Venus and Serena. We've got a very good match on the women's side to get things going in Arthur Ashe Stadium, and that's the third-round match between the defending champion Sloane Stephens, who's looked pretty good so far, and a two-time runner-up here, Victoria Azarenka.
That's going to be another cracker, and it kicks off play, so it's plenty for the fans to look forward to. Azarenka has shown good form in the first two rounds. It's been a little bit, well, it has been difficult for her to get back into the swing of things. You know, a lot's been talked about in terms of her custody battle she's had. That has really been a factor for her in, you know, pegging her back. Unfortunately, there have been some injury problems as well for Azarenka. But on that front, she seems to be in the best shape of her life, and she's talked about that. Azarenka, I think it's going to be a really, really good matchup. Stephens has been impressive for me in her first two rounds, pulling out a couple of good wins, especially last time out. She took on a player who was really an unknown quantity. However, she was able to get through that in three sets over Kalinina, the Ukrainian. So I like what I've seen from Stephens. I mean, even before the U.S. Open, made the final in Montreal, played splendidly against Simona Halep. So her match play is getting better. I think she's developing as a player. She's maturing as a player. I love the emotion she showed when she won her second round. So it's all pointing up for her. I think she's going to have too much in the end for Azarenka.
At this stage, as you said, It's been stop and start for Azarenka working her way back. We've got Karolina Pliskova taking on Sofia Kenin of the United States, Svitolina and Wang. Those are some other matches for day five on the women's side. On the men's side, a good one between Rafa Nadal, the defending champion, the top seed, and Karen Khachanov, a next-generation young guy from Russia, but might be a little too much to ask to tangle with Nadal on Arthur Ashe Stadium.
He's looked pretty good for the most part, Rafa. He did have a small little blip against Vasek Pospisil in the second set. He was down by a break before he was able to turn it around and recover. He's faced Khachanov a couple times this season already in Monte Carlo on the clay, won it in straight sets, and then in Canada, 7-6, 6-4. So that one was tighter. I think he likes the conditions of this year, playing on the different surfaces or different courts, different stadiums, I should say, for Rafa. It's kind of a slower, hard court. The ball is bouncing a little bit higher. That's going to suit him very well. And I really don't see Khachanov having enough to beat Nadal, maybe able to take a set off Nadal, but to beat Rafa, best 3 of 5, yeah, it's going to be difficult for him.
And you talk about the different kinds of conditions. That includes playing during the day versus at night. Rafa's played at night. He'll be playing during the day on day 5. Let's hear what he had to say about the differences between the two sessions.
Being honest, noted that probably during the day is a little bit harder because the hot is it was a lot these couple of days, but during the night the humidity is even higher. So yeah, both things are tough. But good thing is I think things gonna improve in the next couple of days.
And that will be Rafa playing during the day. During the night on Ash, after Venus and Serena, it's Juan Martín Del Potro, the 2009 champ. Somebody else who's gotten here pretty quietly, taking on Fernando Verdasco, who dispatched Andy Murray. Also a very good one, very interesting one. Two players who've had fantastic years, Kevin Anderson and Denis Shapovalov.
Denis Shapovalov, wow, what a great run he had last year, making it to the fourth round. But Anderson had an even better run, going all the way to the final last year. I believe it's going to be the first matchup. It will be interesting to see how Shapovalov handles the mental battle of facing somebody who has such a big serve in Anderson, because, you know, there may not be a lot of long rallies in that one. Shapovalov, I think, is somebody, even though he doesn't really want to get into extended long, long rallies, he does work the point. He's not going to go for broke often. Oftentimes, although he looks to strike his return big, Shapovalov. So I think mentally it's going to be key for me to see how he comes out and faces somebody like Anderson. And Anderson, after that first round match against Ryan Harrison, 5 sets where he was suffering from cramps, his second round match was a lot easier. So he was, maybe for him, able to recover after that grueling first round match. And boy, he's turned into a different player in the last 12, 14, 16 months, Anderson, which has been nice to see because he's one of the game's hardest workers and he's a great ambassador for the game.
And somebody else about the same age as him who's really enjoyed a solid year is John Isner, and the American will play Dusan Lajovic. And Isner, he's been pushed a little bit, but what can Lajovic do to him and the big serve? That's his biggest weapon.
Well, Lajovic, I think like many players, will be thinking going into this match, okay, I just have to protect my serve. Let's protect my serve. And Isner, you know, judging by the statistics, he's way, way down in return games won. So if he breaks, you know, once in a couple of sets, maybe, I mean, that could be the tally we're going to see. We're going to see a couple of tie breaks. Lajovic is a guy with a one-handed backhand. He strikes a pretty sweet ball. He almost beat Alexander Zverev at the French Open, took him to 5 sets. Whenever John plays, even if he's in form, you just don't know. You just don't know, because once you factor the tie breaks, you could have a couple of tie breaks and it really could go either way. I mean, he went 5 sets in his last round against Nicolas Jarry, who was having a very, very good season. I think the experience helped Isner pull it out in the 4th and 5th sets, playing some very good tennis, and he hit almost 40 aces. So close as ever in an Isner match, but I think Isner is gonna win this one.
A whole lot to look forward to on day and night 5. Here at this 2018 U.S. Open. That's our preview of day 5 of the 2018 U.S. Open. For Ravi Uba, I'm Brian Clark. Thanks for listening. You can join us for complete live coverage every day on U.S. Open Radio, presented by American Express. You can find us on usopen.org or the U.S. Open app.
Celebrating 50 years of the U.S. Open with Stan Smith.
In 1971, when you won that was your first Grand Slam tournament triumph. What are your recollections about that final round, especially when you beat Jan Kodesh in a well-played 4-set final?
Well, first of all, it's pretty hard to believe it's been 50 years since 68 when Arthur won it. And then, of course, just a couple years later when I was able to win it. But it was an unusual kind of a situation because the actual semifinals were rained out on Saturday. They were rained out on Sunday. They were rained out on Monday. And we played on Tuesday.
The semis on Tuesday.
The semis on Tuesday.
Right,
so,
right.
And, of course, the finals on Wednesday. So it was pretty unusual. After I beat Ocker in the semis, I had to play doubles. We were able to play with spikes. It was pretty interesting. They had the three courts in the center court of Forest Hills. And so we played the singles on the outside courts, the two different semis. And then the courts were so wet, they were trying to preserve that center court, I believe. And then we were able to wear spikes. They allowed us to wear spikes on that on one of the center courts, the outside center court in the stadium. And so they weren't going to use it again, so they weren't worried about it being too chewed up. And we were able to actually play quite well with spikes, and our opponents didn't have spikes.
Damn,
anyway, that
you,
was
for you as a big man, though. You're 6'4", unusually tall for your time. How difficult was it to sort of deal with those spikes and get and move the way you wanted to on that court?
The spikes allow you to really, you know, get a holding, but you got to make sure you lift up your feet, because if you didn't lift up your feet, you could turn your ankle quite easily. Eric Van Dillen, my partner, moved magnificently during that time. He just glided around and didn't ever slip, and the other guys were slipping like crazy. But
so obviously, you managed to defeat Ocker, and then waiting for you in the finals is Jan Kodesh, who had beaten Arthur Ashe. So what was the challenge like to beat Kodesh, and what do you remember most about that triumph?
Well, he had beaten Newcomb as well. Actually, maybe that was the next year he beat Newcomb, but he was
he beat him. You're right. He beat him in the first round that year.
In the first round, he was kind of an upset, but big upset. But he was playing great. And the funny thing that happened was Pancho Segura, who just passed away, unfortunately, worked with me from age 15 to 18, and he made a huge impact on my game, especially my strategic point of view. And so I hadn't really seen him too much, but he happened to be there, and he actually walked with me as I walked from the clubhouse to the center court. And he said, "You got to do these three things against Kodesh." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Well, you got to attack his second serve, run around and hit forehands on the second serve. It's weak. You got to make sure you lob him because he closed so much, and he was very quick, and he moved back pretty well, but he wasn't the tallest guy out there. So the lob was going to be effective." And then he said, "You should kick the ball to his forehand." That's an unusual strategy. People, when they kick, usually kicking it to the backhand. But anyway, the first set, I served really well. I served, you know, a lot of first serves, hard and flat, and end up losing the set.
Yeah. Well, he was a great returner, right, Stan?
And well, he was a good returner. Plus, he liked the ball low. And if you hit it hard and flat on that wet grass court, it stayed low. And it was right in a strike zone, so I suddenly remembered that maybe I should try to kick it. So I ended up kicking a lot of balls as first serves to the forehand, and he has continental grip on his forehand. He didn't like that high ball in the forehand, so it really started paying off as the match went along, and I was able to get win the second and third sets and get into the fourth set.
So in the end, Segura's words certainly rang in your ears, and you managed to beat Jan, who, of course, a couple years later beat you in a heartbreaking match in the semifinals. So,
that's right.
I mean, how satisfying was that? That's the U.S. Open. You're an American. It's your first major. How long did all of that take to sink in?
Well, it was interesting because it was the second year of the tiebreaker, and I had played seven tiebreakers during that tournament, and the seventh was that fourth set against Kodesh. And I ran around, hit some forehand winners on returns, and I hit a pretty crucial lob during that tiebreaker as well. So those elements that Segura had mentioned to me really did pay off. And it was an odd thing because we actually played doubles after that. I had to go in and shower, then had a bite to eat, met the press, and it was getting later and later. So we went out, played the doubles, and we were up 2-1. Newcomb fell down and looked like he was hurt. The doctor came out, and those times the doctor couldn't do anything they wanted. And it got delayed, and we ended up losing the fourth set. And by this time, it was getting dark, really dark. And nobody wanted to stay for the fourth day, that's Thursday, to finish the tournament of the third week of the tournament. And so we decided to split the prize money and play a 9-point tiebreaker for the title. And we ended up being 3-all with Eric and Dylan, my partner, to serve against Newcomb and Taylor. And Newcomb ran around, hit a forehand after Eric missed his first serve, and Eric missed a volley. Then Eric missed his first serve against Taylor. Taylor ran around, hit a forehand, and then Newcomb poached. We lost the match. It was very disappointing because we were kind of in control of the match, really. But anyway, it was interesting because in the dark, we finished the tournament. And then I was supposed to play in San Jose or someplace the next week. But, of course, the tournament had already been well on its way. And I didn't want to play anyway. You know, when you win something like that, you just want to relax. And we actually went out to California and just hung out, played a little golf. And I got a call from the White House, supposedly. And so in the morning, it was like 9 in the morning, and we were just about to walk out the door to play golf. And this lady says, "Well, this is so-and-so from the White House. President Nixon would like to speak to you." And I said, "Oh, sure. You know, it's one of our friends, you know, joking with us." And so I just offhand, I said, "Well, you know, okay, we're not going to be here for a while, but, you know, maybe at 5 o'clock, if he wants to call, you know, he'd call." And we got back, and at 5 o'clock, President Nixon called and congratulated me for winning the tournament. So that was a nice call to get.
Well, those were all great memories for you, Stan. But, you know, obviously that win in 71, it was very early in the Open era. You had sort of emerged in, you know, the stages leading up to the Open tennis. What was the feeling like to be a player, you know, a young player like yourself, seeing the emergence of Open tennis and having that first Open in 68? Did you feel like you had really sort of timed your journey well?
Well, my life is, timing's been unbelievable in my life. It changed the junior categories from 11, 13, 15, and 18. For some reason, they had a gap there, and they changed it to 12, 14, 16, and 18, just the year I turned 16. So I was able to get a couple of lucky breaks in the summer after my senior year, and was able to get a scholarship to Southern California based on just a couple matches that just happened to go my way. And so there's been so many things in my life that it's worked well. And this is a good example. 1968, I graduated from college. And those 4 years during the summers of my collegiate career, I played all these tournaments on the East Coast, which were, you know, Philadelphia, Boston, New Jersey, Baltimore, and then also, of course, the U.S. Open. And so I was able to play the U.S. Open after the year I played and won the National Junior Championships in 1964. So I played the U.S. Open all those years, and I played all those other tournaments in the summer, and we're playing the same guys as we played in 1968, 69, when tennis became open.
Yeah, of course, it was the U.S. You had previously, obviously, it was the U.S. Nationals, but you're saying you're facing a lot of the same guys.
Facing the same guys, the same venues, and all of a sudden there was prize money. And during my college years, of course, I couldn't accept prize money. You know, once I graduated, I was able to accept, you know, prize money. The prize money was in all those summer tournaments were $25,000 total prize money. The winner got $5,000 and it went down from there. So it wasn't like there was a lot of prize money, but there was prize money in those tournaments starting in 68. And of course, the winner for the U.S. Open in 1968 was $14,000, which Arthur didn't even get to accept because he was not eligible for that. I actually won $20,000. I was really, you know, fortunate to be able to get that much money.
Stan, obviously you were a very close friend of Arthur Ashe. You were on the Davis Cup team with him in 68. He played the singles and you're in the doubles. And what are your recollections about that historic win of his in 68 and how surprised were you by it?
Well, it was an amazing period of time. Certainly Arthur's victory was one of the highlights, one of the positive highlights of 1968. Of course, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Muhammad Ali became a conscientious objector, and that was big news. And there was amazing things that happened in 1968. But the most positive highlight was Arthur winning and playing some great tennis. You know, he was a slasher this is what I described him in his early years. He would just go for broke on serves. He had one of the best serves in the game, if not the best. He wasn't a big, strong guy. He was 6'2" or so, but not a strong you know, looking guy, but he had great timing, and he was strong in his own sinewy way, but he would just go for shots on returns of serve. You know, if you got it in his strike zone, he would be going for a big shot. And if he was on, he was the best player in the world. If he was off, then he would struggle a bit. Later on in his career, as he got towards the mid-70s, when he won Wimbledon in 75, he became more of a thinker and had some guile as well as power. And so that was an interesting transition with him, because when you played him late 60s and the mid-60s, he was just going for shots. And if he was on, you almost didn't have any say in what would happen.
And you think that was essentially what happened then in 68 at the Open, that, you know, he'd had a great summer and he'd been in the semis of Wimbledon, and then he really was sort of peaking and all the shots were coming off for him that year in the 68 Open?
He was gaining so much confidence. You know, we played 6 Davis Cup matches that year. We played in Richmond, which was significant, obviously, to Arthur to play that first round against the British West Indies in Richmond. And then we played in Mexico. He killed Rafael Osuna, again, just taking Osuna's second serve and just drilling it and serving unbelievable. Then we played Ecuador and Charlotte. And then we played Spain and Cleveland on pretty fast courts. He had to play Santana, Manolo Santana, in a dead match. It was a fifth match. We'd already clinched it, but it was like 4.5 hours. It was a crazy long match, but all throughout that year in 68, he played a lot of tennis. He built a lot of confidence, I think, from playing Davis Cup. And he didn't lose in Davis Cup that year, leading up to the Open and then after the Open when we played the last couple matches. And so he was playing with great confidence, and he was going for shots, and they were going in. And of course, we're playing on grass at Wimbledon. We're playing at grass at the U.S. Open, bad grass, by the way, where the ball was bouncing low and staying low, and his slice serve was cutting out wide and staying low and was very effective. And he was the best player at the time. And I'll never forget when he received the trophy and he's wearing his USA Davis Cup sweat top and his father was standing next to him. So that was a special moment, because Arthur's father was a policeman and had drilled in respect, discipline, hard work, no trash talking on the court, playing hard and fair and giving your opponent the due when they beat you. So seeing him there in the photograph with Arthur holding the trophy and wearing the USA jacket with his father next to him was a photograph that I'll never forget.
Yeah, Life magazine put it on the cover. I won't forget it either. It was a very poignant moment.
Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. Thank you for listening all year to our celebration of 50 years of the U.S. Open.